So it's the Tuesday lunchtime social debate. We have a couple of guests, one being David Foote from the island.
Correct.
Hi, David. Nice to see you.
Nice to see you.
You look panicked.
No, I'm not panicked. I'm not from the island. I'm from Fareham, actually.
You're from Fareham?
Yeah.
All right. So who told me you were from the island, then?
Probably Adrian Bolt.
Ah, all right. It's his fault. We blame him, then. Just move yourself a little bit closer to that microphone. And we've got a Harrison Ford-type figure over there as well. Just introduce yourself, sir.
I'm Mike Wilkes, Provincial Grand Master for the Province of Hampshire and Isle of Wight.
So you sound like high up and very important.
I am the senior mason in Hampshire and Isle of Wight, which has 250 lodges and about 10,000 brethren.
Wow. Wow. I've got so many questions I want to ask, but what we want to do for the next hour is, would it be fair to say we dispel any myths or people assuming things that they may or may not know? That's where I want to be at the end of it.
I think, Ian, a lot of people assume that Freemasonry is a secret society. If it was a secret society, I wouldn't be here.
Well,
I wouldn't be chatting
questions
to you. I wouldn't be prepared to answer all your questions. So.
No, that's true. That was one of my questions. What is the role of a Freemason?
The role of a Freemason?
Yeah.
The purpose of Freemasonry is effectively to improve their individual lives and therefore be of benefit to the community. So we're a fraternal organisation, we're a charitable organisation, and we're dedicated to doing good. And part of the doing good is not just doing good in the community, but also improving our own moral standards and moral worth.
Okay, and you're up and down the country, all around the world?
Was 47 provinces, probably equating to the 47 counties in England and Wales. But we're a worldwide organisation. There's 300,000 Freemasons in this country. Worldwide, there are about six million.
6 million
Freemasons
all around the world. So is that in every single country? We got them
virtually every country. And the great thing about Freemasonry is that if you do travel and you go to an area where you've no contacts at all, you can probably make contact with a Masonic lodge, and you attend that lodge, and you are amongst friends. Even though you haven't met them, they will immediately respect you as a Freemason, and you will respect them.
Okay, I mean, I've got loads and loads of questions.
I'd like to say I'm looking forward to them.
You must have heard them before. You must have heard them before. Many,
I may have heard
times.
The questions, but I've not been on live radio before, so this
okay.
is quite an experience.
Well, why have you agreed to come in?
Really, where you started out, which is dispelling myths. I mean, this myth about we are a secret society. We're not a secret society. We have a unit which travels around Hampshire and Isle of Wight manned by Freemasons who are effectively trying to tell anybody who's interested, any member of the public, exactly what we're all about and what we do.
Okay. What's the thing that irritates you most?
I don't think much irritates me. I think probably the dogma. I think when individuals will say that they know what Freemasonry is all about, and clearly they don't, and they're not prepared to listen. And I think that irritates me, because if they listen and they get an understanding of Freemasonry, I don't think they can be against it. They may not be positively for it, but I don't think you can be against an organisation which is effectively there for the public good.
Okay. What kind of frustrations, David, do you have to overcome on a daily, weekly basis?
I mean, it's people's misconceptions of Freemasonry. It's basically people aren't educated in what we do. And my job as Provincial Communications Officer for Hampshire and Isle of Wight is to try to dispel those myths and, you know, make sure that people do understand what we do, what we're all about. As Mike said, we've got a Freemasonry in the Community trailer, which travels around the whole of the province, and it welcomes people onto its stand, tells them more about Freemasonry, and it's been a huge success. We've had lots of people actually wanting to join Freemasonry on the back of that alone.
Okay, how do they join?
There's many ways of joining. You can go on our website, we're on Facebook, we're on Twitter. You can send an email to our provincial office, and they'll put you in touch with a lodge near you.
Okay. So what's the criteria? If I said to you today, well, hang on, I like to do good, and maybe I should give it a crack.
I'll give you an application form after the show.
Okay.
You've got to be over 21 years of age.
Yeah.
You've got to believe in a supreme being. So you can be of any religion, as long as you believe in a god.
Right.
and you can't have a criminal record.
All right, okay.
Is that a problem?
No, I'm just thinking back. What would be deemed as a criminal record these days? I mean, I did get, age 15, I was put in a police cell for underage drinking.
Ian, you have convictions which are spent.
Right.
And it's spent convictions. And
That's all right.
I would say I would probably steer away from criminal record because... you might look at someone who's got a speeding conviction and say, well, actually, that's a criminal offence, it's a criminal record. What we're really doing is looking for blokes of good moral standing.
Sure.
And if you're a good moral standing, then that's probably good enough.
Yeah, okay. So you might overlook the speeding fine that I got 5 years ago.
I think we'd overlook that, Ian. Yeah. You wouldn't even have to mention that to us. It's not,
okay.
There speaketh the lawyer. Yeah.
All right, okay. But would you then check it out? Do you guys then check it out?
No, we don't. We rely on individuals who are applying to tell us the truth. So we will, part of the questions which they'll be asked is, do you have a criminal conviction? They do not have to mention convictions which are spent, but some do, and we look at that and we take a view, but they don't have to, and we certainly don't check up on them afterwards.
Okay. There's roughly 800-900 Freemasons on the island, is that right?
On the island,
yeah.
There's probably about 1,000 Freemasons on the island. There are 10,500 in Hampshire and Isle of Wight.
That's quite a lot.
Quite a large number, yeah.
Loads of questions. Just one off the top of my head. You know, there's loads of things that you guys have to pull up with on a daily basis. The name calling, the cat calling, all that kind of stuff. Let's deal with them now while we're getting on. I'm not saying we're not going to get on at the end of it, but I'm just thinking off the top of my head. I've heard people say, "Oh yeah, secret society." What would you say to that?
Well, it's a complete misconception. I can tell you why we regard it as a secret society, Ian, if you want to know about that. I think the catcalling and that sort of thing, I think that's very much been consigned to the past. I think when we started with the Freemason Community unit, which has been travelling around Hampshire and Isle of Wight, attending the county shows in major centres and so forth, I think when we started that out, we did have some comments that the Freemasons are coming out of their shells. But that seems to have gone. And nowadays people are showing much greater interest in what we do and what we're about.
Would it be fair to say there may be a few more people involved in it as well and actually finding out the truth?
I think that's right. And also that we are making much better use of the media. So today's interview, for example, David's already mentioned the website, that we're very active on social media, Twitter, Facebook, and not only as a province, but also each area in the province. And many of our lodges have their own Twitter accounts, their own Facebook accounts, their own websites. In the past, our new members tended to come from a contact, an individual who a Mason who would ask a friend, would you like to join? Nowadays, it's much broader than that. Men who can see the good that Freemasons do but don't necessarily know a Freemason can very quickly and very easily find out what it's all about and how to join us. And one of the first things on our website, if you go on the website, it's what is Freemason? And the next question is, how do I become one?
Right.
And that leads you through. And that's the same with the United Grand Lodge of England website, which is the governing body for Hampshire and Isle of Wight and the 47 provinces, which I mentioned.
Okay. Just something in the back of my head from years ago, you hear people say things, funny handshake brigade.
Yeah.
So what, is there a handshake? Is there many handshakes? Or is that a myth?
No, there is a handshake. The handshake is only used as part of our ceremonies. It should never be used outside. If you use it outside one of our ceremonies, it's tantamount to being an abuse and is actually something which we frown upon and it can result in disciplinary action against the individual concerned.
Sure.
The handshake comes from the times when Freemasons. When stonemasons were building the great cathedrals, great castles and so forth. And in those days, they didn't have indentures. Many of them couldn't read and write. So they had to be entrusted with certain signs to demonstrate that they were of a particular quality, a particular standard in terms of their apprenticeship. So you'd have an entered apprentice. Once he'd graduated through, he would then become a fellow craft, and he would then become a master mason. If he then went on to another area and had to prove what standard he'd reached, he would do that not by producing an indenture or piece of paper that showed that he'd taken exams or had got to a certain standard. He would have been entrusted with certain signs and certain passwords, which he could then give to the new prospective employer to demonstrate the standard he'd reached in stonemasonry.
Okay, so just going back, just dealing with the handshake once and for all, there is a handshake, and there are different handshakes.
Different handshakes for each degree in Freemasonry. There are 3 degrees: entered apprentice, fellow craft, and master mason. And therefore, going back to the stonemasons,
yeah.
If you qualified as an entered apprentice, you'd be given a certain sign, a certain word, a certain handshake. And if you then went to another building site, you could show that you were an entered apprentice by showing that sign and the handshake. Once you progress to become a fellow craft, you could do the same, and once you progress to become a master mason, you could do the same.
Let's be honest. I mean, if just say, for instance, if you were saying hello to a lady and you kissed her in a certain way, there'll be different kisses as well, wouldn't there? We would kiss people in a different way, and so on and so forth. So I don't know why people get so het up over a handshake. I really don't.
I think where it arose is because there was some concern, and this again arises out of the secret society bit. There was some concern that if there was, say, a committee meeting and a Freemason walked into the room, he could demonstrate to other members there, other Freemasons there, that he was a Freemason by giving a particular handshake, and therefore perhaps being preferred. And that is one of the reasons why we say actually these handshakes should never be used outside of our ceremony. They're very much part of the ceremony and not for public use at all.
Okay, so do you obviously give some kind of training for it then? You know, is there something? I mean, just for instance, is there something on the website that we could look at and say, right, that's the handshake for that one, and so on?
No, you can't. The training for it comes as part of our ritual ceremonies, the ritual dramas that we progress through as part of the process of becoming a better person and becoming an established Freemason.
Okay.
But I'm sure if you go on Google. Yeah, you'll find out what the handshake is. That's entirely a matter for users.
Is it real, though? Because obviously, because it's private to you in a way. So if it's on Google, do you raise your eyebrows at that? Because hang on a minute, this is something you've got to build up to. It's like your own starter kit for on Google, and everyone can see it, which is a bit disrespectful, isn't it?
It's a pity. It's not something which one can comment adversely on, because it's part of modern life. You can find out virtually anything you want to find out if you go on Google.
Sadly, yeah.
But the fact that you can find it on Google doesn't mean that if you ask me now, I would be able to say, oh, well, this is the handshake. Because I've said that I keep it private. It is part of our ritual ceremonies, and that's where it belongs. But if you really want to find out, you could find out on Google.
Okay. There's one question that's been floating around, and I wanted to ask it about 5 minutes ago. Someone said, why no ladies?
Well, I suppose the short answer, Ian, is because it's a men's organisation. I mean, I don't want to join the Women's Institute, and I can't believe many women would want to join Freemasonry. But there is an organisation of women's Freemasons, and it's one of the questions which we used to get and probably get with increasing frequency now on our Freemason community unit, which is why no ladies? And we then give them a piece of paper which gives them details of women Freemasonry. If a lady wants to join, she can join the women's Freemasons, but she can't join the bloke side.
No, see, that's fair enough, isn't it? I mean, if you've got a women's institute, you're not going to allow blokes in, are you? It's
absolutely.
As simple as that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's, that's just daft. Well, so there are female Freemasons out there?
Yes, there are.
Are they as popular, or are there many?
No, they're nothing like as large as the men's organisation. But they certainly exist. I think they mirror much of what we do. I mean, they call themselves brothers, not sisters. Right. So they actually do follow very much what we do. But it is restricted to females.
Yeah, so as you probably gathered, we're right next door to the wood chipping area, and we are in the process of soundproofing that wall. Hopefully, fingers crossed. I don't know if Adrian is out there probably listening somewhere. He may go in and take that rubber hammer away from someone in a minute, which would be very interesting. So lots of questions coming your way. Is there any question I can't ask you, or is it you know, can we be totally like this?
You can ask me what you like, and I'll give you a straight answer. I mean, which may be a non-answer on the basis that if you ask me what the handshake is, I'll tell you to go on Google. I'm not going to give it you.
No, well, absolutely, because it's personal to you and other Freemasons, obviously. So
and more than anything, actually, and it would be a shame for anybody wanting to join Freemasonry to be pre-warned what the handshake is, because it's part of the ceremony, it's part of the excitement of going through the process of initiation.
So that process of initiation, we hear like many things about, you know, being spanked and stuff like that. I mean, is it as scary as that?
Not at all, no. And the important thing about the ceremony of initiation is that it's called the shared experience. Everybody that becomes a Freemason, whether he's somebody like myself or somebody like His Royal Highness the Duke of Kent, who is the Grand Master of the United Grand Lodge of England, we've all been through the same shared experience of becoming a Freemason.
Okay, so I suppose, you know, again, that's kind of private, so you don't really want to go into detail.
No, and like Mike said, we've promised that we wouldn't share it outside of our lodge meetings.
Does it hurt?
No.
That's right.
So one of the things you often hear is you know, about the rolled up trouser leg.
I was coming on to that as well.
Oh, well, I preempted you. We do in certain parts of the ceremonies, the candidate will have his trouser leg rolled up, or he may be wearing a particular suit which actually has a lack of trouser leg below the knee. And the reason for that is that he will be taking an obligation, and he will kneel for the obligation, and he should kneel on a bare knee. It's as simple as that. So there's nothing other than that.
No.
But it is simply out of respect for the fact that you are kneeling to take an obligation, you kneel on a bare knee.
See, that kind of makes sense, doesn't it? That really does. I mean, you know, most people, myself included, up until a certain age, you just thought that these things was going on. People make the joke of it, and the joke got bigger because, you know, you'd heard it, or somebody, you'd seen a sketch on the television, and you see the handshake, and then the trouser leg rolled up, and so on. But it's as simple as that. You need to bear on a naked knee, on a bare knee. Kate Britton says, I have the book Freemasonry Part 1, a manual of the first 3 degrees with an introduction keystone to the Royal Arch 3rd edition, 1845. How come a secret society has been written down for all to read?
Well, I suppose one starts out by saying, Ian, where we started at, it is not a secret society. yes, our ritual is available. Our Book of Constitutions, which is our governing regulations, they're available on the website. They're available to purchase. And likewise, the ritual is written down and is available for people to purchase. But the real shared experience, which David mentioned, is actually going through that process. The words are part of it, but when you are a candidate going through the ceremony, there's a certain emotion there that you can't express in words, but you can look at the words beforehand if you wish to do so. I think it's much better for someone who is being initiated into Freemasonry not to have seen the words beforehand, so the experience is that much more wonderful for them.
How much, going back in time, I mean, how much of a across the board do you have now of people that are Freemasons, and you know, has it changed, say, from 30 years ago when maybe it would have been, could have been more businessmen mentality?
I think it has changed. Certainly now we take men from all walks of life. I think possibly 30, 40, 50 years ago, it was more professional, business, and so forth. But now it's spread right across the board, and we have a number of special interest lodges. We have, for example, a scouting lodge which we created about 18 months ago, 2 years ago, and that appeals to those who have been involved in the scouting association in their youth. And they then become Freemasons. It's not an age thing, it's not a professional thing, it's simply related to scouting. We have a number of military lodges, we have sports lodges, we have a football lodge which is being formed, and these are special interest as opposed to what do you do for a living, what business are you in, and so forth.
Has it, it probably has, because as I say, you've got more people and more across the board, but has it improved it by kind of allowing other people, you know, like myself? I mean, I would have been in the mindset of 30 years ago, you wouldn't have had me because I had long hair and an earring, you know, and you know, that's the way I kind of, perhaps we all looked at things, yeah. You know, we weren't like big businessmen and very, very wealthy.
Well, we have a lot of people with long hair and earrings in Freemasonry anyway.
Yeah.
But and tattoos.
Did you have then? Was it, you know, has it changed over the years? Has it like become a little bit more relaxed?
I think it has changed. Mm. Yeah.
For the better?
Very much for the better. I mean, you know, we're part of the community, and we're part of society, and therefore we ought to have amongst us representatives of every strata of society, and that's what we strive to achieve.
Okay, so there's many levels that you can get up to, and you're at the highest level that you can become?
I guess so. I'm the highest level I can become in this province, which is as far as I would be able to go. I'm here for 7 years, possibly 10, as Provincial Grand Master. And with 10,000 Masons, there aren't many who are going to get to Provincial Grand Master. But we have a number of Grand and Provincial officers below that, which brethren can strive to achieve. And again, they do that on their own merit, on their own ability and commitment, and nothing else.
Okay, so if you just say, for instance, do you have to be a certain age to do what you're doing, or, you know, just say, for instance, if you join the Masons at 21, you could quickly become, you know, higher up, higher level quite quickly?
Very quickly. I mean, you could be through the chair. If you joined at 21, you'd be through the chair by 26 or 27. You could then become a provincial officer by certainly early 30s. And after that, it's really a question of how you contribute towards the organisation. But if you are very keen, enthusiastic, and you do make a meaningful contribution, then that will be recognised, and you can very quickly go through the ranks, yes.
Okay. Veronica says, my dad, when he was alive, was a Freemason. He was a Grand Master. Abroad, we were never allowed to discuss matters with him. He always said that the Masons would take care of his family if he died. He has passed on many years ago, but my mother and his children never got any help. That's not your fault. I just want to point that out. It's not your fault, but is there anything you can do about that?
it's a great shame to hear that. We have an organisation, or part of the organisation, called Freemasonry Cares. And the objective there is to spread the word amongst the public generally, if you like, that Freemasonry and the charitable and the benevolent side is available the dependents, the deceased, the widows, and so forth of deceased Freemasons. And there's a number, an 0800 number, which they can call. So it's a great shame to hear that in that particular case,
yeah,
the lady was let down. It may be something to do with the secrecy aspect, and we may be coming on to that, I don't know, but it may be that if he kept everything secret, she wouldn't have known who to contact seek for help, ask for help.
I'm guessing this may have been a long time ago. Is it a bit more relaxed when talking about things with the families, or it's not quite so hush-hush now? Sorry, you can't talk about that. Your dad's in the Masons, that's it, you can't talk about it. He can't actually say where he goes on a Thursday night or whatever.
We are more enormously open. Proud of our organisation. Organization and what we do, and we will want our family to be proud of it, and they can only be proud of it if they know all about it. So we're very open with members of the family, we're very open with friends, we're very open with everybody, which is what I'm trying to do now. And this business about the secret society, I mean, it effectively arose coming up to the Second World War. Prior to that, Freemasons were completely open. We had public processions through High Street. We had a number of processions which are recorded here as having occurred in the on the island. And then we started to become a target for the Nazis. There were up to 80 and 100,000 Freemasons. 80 to 200,000 Freemasons who were murdered in the Holocaust. And Freemasons in this country in particular went underground. They started to become a secret about their membership. I think it's a great credit to the organisation. They didn't turn their back on it and leave, but they started to become secret about it. And that went in the situation, the period leading up to the Second World War, through the Second World War, and thereafter, when there were still anti-Masonic countries. Was Franco in Spain, there was Mussolini and so forth. And the secret society bit, it was much more a question of being secret about your membership as opposed to secret society. But as that went on, I think members of the public became concerned that there is this secret society. Why doesn't this chap want people to know that he's a Freemason? Well, the reason he didn't want people to know he was a Freemason is because if the Nazis had been successful and come over here during the Second World War, his life would have been at risk. His family's life would have been at risk.
Are there any countries where you touched on other countries and touched on things where it's banned or it's not very well thought of?
I'm sure there are, I'm sure in such places there are probably lodges, but not many. I mean, it is in a worldwide organisation in virtually every country. It is accepted.
Okay. Angela says, why does the initiation ceremony involve a noose?
That's again, it's symbolical. I mean, a lot of our ceremonies are based on symbolism, it is indicative of the man who's coming to Freemasonry, who is poor, penniless, and he comes into the craft, and the world of Freemasonry is opened up to him. So it's almost as if he's being taken from one part of society into another part of society. Symbolically, we also say, well, actually, if you wanted to run away as you were coming in, then we could have pulled you back again. But I mean, that's not.
Well, when you get married, there's a bit when you get married in some churches, you get that thing and they wrap it around your wrist, don't they? Tie it. I mean, it's the same sort of thing, isn't it? Mm. Does the noose go around somebody's neck, or can't you say? Because it's obviously.
Oh no, it goes around. It does go around the neck, and it's removed as part of the initiation ceremony.
Yeah. But nobody gets hurt?
No.
Okay, look, there's a load of other tricky questions. What I'm going to do, because I'm going to ask them, because I think it's a great opportunity for you to push away the myths. Also, what we want to do is we want to talk about the good work that you do. So we'll take a break and then we'll come back and we'll talk some more, if that's all right.
Yeah, sure.
The Lunchtime Social, brought to you in association with White Fibre, providers of the fastest fibre optic broadband on the island. Call them on 01983 240 240. That's 01983 240 240.
Here estate agents, independent estate agents covering the Isle of Wight. Call now on 01983 620 062 to take a full advantage of our fantastic commission offer of 1%, no VAT. Also, visit our website www.peerestateagents.co.uk to see helpful advice on selling your home and all of our current properties available. Call today to take full advantage of this limited offer. 01983 620 062 or email inquiries@peerestateagents.co.uk.
Business Insight, a weekly programme of interviews and insights from some of the island's most respected business leaders on what drives their success. Plus, business news and information to help your business succeed in today's fast-paced and competitive business world. Mondays at 6:20 p.m. on The Evening Event with Darren Fernando. Also available for download and podcast online at vectisradio.com. Business Insight is brought to you by Jigsaw Sales and Marketing Consultants, driving business success.
Fretbuzz.net is the place to go for all the latest music reviews, news, photos and more, covering island bands to established acts from across the globe. The guys at Fretbuzz will give you their unique view on the music world. As well as music reviews, Fretbuzz now offer bands and musicians a range of promotional services, from photo shoots, video show reels to advertising and features on the site. It caters for all budgets and requirements. Just call 07576 138 337 today for more information. So whatever you're looking for, visit us at fret-buzz.net for all your music needs, or find us on Facebook by searching Fretbuzz Music Reviews.
As the nation's leading first aid charity, we at St John Ambulance believe nobody should die because they needed first aid and didn't get it. Yet only one in five of you would know what to do in the event of an emergency. So why not be the difference in your local community by volunteering with the St John Ambulance units at either Ryde or Newport? You'll learn life-saving skills which could be the difference between life and death.
Hampshire and Isle of Wight Air Ambulance, saving lives across Hampshire and the Isle of Wight. Flying 7 days a week, 365 days a year, our helicopter is called out many times a day and we can reach anywhere within the Isle of Wight, including the helipad at St Mary's Hospital, within 20 minutes. Funded solely by donations, we rely upon the generosity of the public to keep us flying and saving lives. To see how you can help, please check out www.hiow-airambulance.org.uk.
The Hair Lounge is a unisex hairdresser's in both Newport and Ryde. With its experienced team of stylists, we pride ourselves in offering great-looking hair at affordable prices. Whether you are looking for expert colouring to precision cutting, The Hair Lounge is the place to be. At The Hair Lounge, we pride ourselves on being a forward-thinking salon which uses the industry's leading brands and techniques to always make sure our clients look and feel their very best. Call them 01983 718584 or visit them at 35 High Street in Newport. The Hair Lounge are also at 9 Cross Street in Ryde, or call 01983 564447. The Hair Lounge is the place to be.
Peer Estate Agents, independent estate agents covering the Isle of Wight. Call now on 01983 620 062 to take a full advantage of our fantastic commission offer of 1%, no VAT. Also, visit our website www.peerestateagents.co.uk to see helpful advice on selling your home and all of our current properties available. Call today to take full advantage of this limited offer. 01983 620 062 or email inquiries@peerestateagents.co.uk.
The Lunchtime Social, brought to you in association with White Fibre, providers of the fastest fibre optic broadband on the island. Check them out at www.whitefibre.com.
Now, we just joined us. We'll come back, obviously, after the break, and we're just having a conversation. And I must admit, the tail end of the last bit of the conversation that didn't go out on air was very well explained, which maybe we ought to revisit. But first, we'll probably get there by asking this question. Now, somebody has sent in a question, and I know this lady, and I know she is a very intelligent lady. And she's asking a question about the Mithraism, was very similar to Masonic lodges, men only, various stages and initiations led by the equivalent of the Grand Master and a Grand Master, sounds posher, doesn't it? And a number of other similarities. There are a number of Mithraic temples throughout Britain, thanks to the Romans. Does your guest know if the Masons have evolved from Mithraism? If that's a word.
Admit that I've got absolutely no idea, Ian. I know Mithras was a Roman god, but I don't think there's any link to Freemasonry on that one.
Okay, she goes on to say, always find early cults fascinating and their evolution, history and urban myths linked. Shame on you. That's a message to somebody else as well. So anyway, I don't think it was aimed at you guys, so don't take offence by that. I think it was a guy called Kevin Barclay Jay, whose Mithraism to Masonic via the Knights Templars, all urban myth. In the 18th century, the guilds groups sought to protect their trade against increased taxes and patronage by inventing Freemasonry. They lifted the initiation ceremony from many sources, including the esoteric writings of the time. Is that something you want to comment on, or should we move on?
I just think that there's so many different theories out there as to how Freemasonry started, why it started, and so forth. This chap has obviously got his view. I don't think it's a generally accepted view. And I know nothing about Mithra, so I'm sure there's no connection with that either.
Okay. There's a few other questions. We'll come back to those in a mo. But let's talk about the good that you do. So, you know, it all goes quiet. Look, we haven't done anything. There's lots of things. Yeah. We were talking teddy bears. You won't believe we were talking teddy bears during the commercial break.
Teddy bears is something which we do locally, but which actually spread to a number of provinces across the constitution. And that is that every casualty department, every in this county, in this province, has a supply of little teddy bears. The only indication it's coming from us is that there's a little label on it that says donated by Freemasons, by local Freemasons. But the intention is that it's given to any children or any child who's admitted to the hospital and who's traumatised. And they are so well received by not only the children but by their families and by the hospital staff, because suddenly the child has a little bear which it can relate to, and there are times when I think nurses have actually put bandage on the bear to show the child what they're going to do and so forth.
We have absolutely, after working up in A&E, those bears are so well received by the child, and it's amazing what cuddling a bear can do when you're trying, you know, to sort out a child that's screaming, shouting. The bear works wonders. And they're fantastic, absolutely fantastic. And like you say, it's not a lot, but it makes an awful difference when you're working up there, and it makes a big difference to those children. And I'm sure they keep them forever.
That's lovely to hear. It really is, because we've all thought it's very much appreciated. But to hear that from someone with first-hand experience is fantastic.
So fantastic. Good stuff that you do. I mean, that's just the
Freemasons Grand Charity have given 120 million to non-Masonic charities since they were founded in 1981. So far this year, David and I have attended the Macula Society within this province and presented a cheque for £50,000. We've done a similar £50,000 to the Brains Trust Charity, Brain Tumour Charity. And £45,000 to the Trelaw College in respect of a converted four-wheel drive vehicle for transporting disabled people around the county. So that's an indication of the sort of thing that we're doing nationally. Through the Freemason Grand Charity.
Okay. Which, have you got anything major that you're doing at the moment that you're working on, something that's top of the list?
We've got our own Masonic Festival, which is for the Royal Masonic Trust for Girls and Boys. That's a charity which looks after the children and families of Freemasons. Normally these festivals run for a period of 5 years. Ours comes to a climax in 2016. We've so far raised just over £6 million. We're hoping to do just over £7 million, although the appeals director, who may be listening to this, is probably saying, actually, I want £8 million. But that's all from the pockets of Freemasons in this province.
Fantastic. I mean, do you feel that you get enough credit, or doesn't it matter?
I don't think it matters to some extent. I don't think we want credit for the good that we do, but I think it would be good to have credit as an organisation that, no, there is nothing sinister, no, there is nothing secret, no, there's nothing untoward. Talking to you today, and if people listening see the charitable things that we do and how much we give to charity and how much we work, it's not only giving money, but the Jubilee Sailing Trust. We supply individuals to do a certain amount of marshalling for them and so forth, and I think David will have some ideas of other activities which we get involved in, where it's just manpower, it's just helping out, it's just doing things to ease the burden of others.
Okay. Do you want to elaborate on that?
Well, there's a couple of events on the Isle of Wight coming up, actually, where we're supplying marshals for the... there's a Round the Island walk, or 5 mile walk. I'm not quite sure what the terminology of it
right.
is. We've got 40 marshals we'll be supplying to help out with the organisation of that event.
Would that be Walk the Wight?
I think that's the one,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Okay.
Sorry, I'm not being in Ireland.
No, that's fine.
And there's a number of other things like that. And in the pipeline for charitable purposes, we're going to make a donation to the Hampshire and Isle of Wight Air Ambulance quite shortly. So that's in the pipeline. And it was only announced today the terrible cyclone, Hurricane Pam, in the Pacific Ocean. The Grand Charity have just announced an emergency grant of £20,000 with respect to that. So we act quite quickly on those sorts of terrible catastrophes.
Yeah, no, it's you see it on the news and you think, who's helping these people?
Mm.
Who's helping these people? But you know, then you get the you look at it from the other point of view. Earlier on, we were talking about the 3 day week and the electricity was going off and so on and so forth. And one of the gentlemen in the back office made a comment of, who was helping us then? But things have moved on. I mean, we're talking that's 50-odd years ago, 40-odd years ago. So, I mean, I think it's a little bit selfish to think like that, don't you think? I think we've got to help people if we can, and we should help them, surely.
I think we should, yes.
So going back to the Isle of Wight, the charity on the Isle of Wight, you're sending 40 marshals to help out with the... Which obviously will help out the Old Man Baton Hospice.
That's right.
Which is probably the biggest charity on the island that most people support. There are other wonderful charities as well. We're supporting 5 at the moment. The Air Ambulance is another one. Is there anybody else that you're helping at the moment?
Right across the country, we've got a complete list of non-Masonic charities that we're helping out. It looks as if David might be looking some of those out at the moment. But
he's sort of a magician. He just pulled out some stuff there from somewhere.
I mean, just last year, the grand charity that Mike alluded to, it just during 2014, it donated over £6 million to non-Masonic charities, various hospices, air ambulances. So there's a huge amount of money going to non-Masonic charities.
Do you support the food bank?
We do support food banks in various different areas within the province, yeah. A lot of individual lodges support food banks, yeah.
I mean, I think it's, you know, I was trying to explain to my mum the other day, she's 81 years old and she doesn't believe we have food banks on the island. And I said, look, hang on a minute. I said, we've got them. They're real. They're needed. So, you know, they need support. So you are supporting them, which is
great.
We're
supporting them in... as an indication of the need for this sort of discussion and this sort of debate and the openness which we're trying to promote, but there is a food bank within the province which actually declined to accept a cheque for over £500 from one of our lodges. And I have to say that the members of that lodge, in particular the master who was promoting this particular food bank, was very upset. But they declined to accept it because they said actually it was coming from Freemasons, and they thought that it was wrong, and they didn't want to take the money.
How incredibly short-sighted, and you know, that is a travesty that one person can make a decision on people whether they eat or not, because in some cases that's what it is. Mm. You know, so I think do you leave it at that? Do you then, because I mean, I'd be inclined to say, hang on a minute, you need sorting out.
We tried to take it further. I did contact the church authority within that area. But it was decided that it was actually down to those who were running the food bank to make the decision, and they decided to return the cheque. That was down to them, so it didn't go any further.
I think that's quite frustrating. Mm. for I mean, anybody listening now thinking there were people that were probably could have done with food that day. Mm. And they've had to go without because of someone's beliefs or you know, whatever. You know, I'd have been inclined to sort of put them on air and embarrass the hell out of them. But and when I say take them out, I don't mean like, you know, go down there and take them out. Somebody should have a word. Mm. For sure. Do you come up against that sort of attitude very much?
No, very, very infrequently. It's very rare now. I think going back a few years, it was an attitude which came across every so often. But nowadays, it's very, very rare. And in my 5 years now as provincial Grand Master, it's the only occasion I've had where a donation from the Freemasons has been rejected simply because it was coming from Freemasons.
I find it unbelievable that it has even escaped being in the news, because, you know, that to me is a dreadful situation. You never turn away things like that. If, you know, someone's making a decision that you know, whether or not somebody eats that day, they're not even talking to the people that are actually at the sharp end and the ones that are not eating that day. I think it's dreadful. Maybe we should name and shame that particular person, but that's probably not for you to do.
No, it's not.
There must be other things that you're doing at the moment that maybe we should know about, maybe we should talk about.
Well, I've mentioned the festival, which is the main one. All of our lodges also have their own. I say favourite charity. The master will normally say during his year that he would like to support another local charity. So quite apart from the main push for our festival, all of our lodges will be supporting local charities, right from scouts and local scout huts and so forth, right through to hospices and so forth. As far as individuals are, you've got a list there, haven't
you? Yeah, we've got
a huge list.
We'll test you now. Let me just read out some of these things, because I think this is a phenomenal amount of money here. You know, we're talking, you know, grants for air ambulances, 192,000, hospice grants, 600,000, 241 hospices, minor grants of £150,000, you know, religious buildings, £10,000, towards upgrade of Durham Cathedral. I mean, the list is endless, and, you know, we're not talking about a few quid here, we're talking about an awful lot of money that obviously will make a huge amount of you know, difference to people, which is wonderful. Apart from that one one food bank that the guy decided to not accept, you know, there's an awful lot of stuff you put into medical research as well, which is wonderful. So I mean, there's a lot of stuff here that people just would not be aware of what you do.
And it's not just the money, it's our time that we give as well. We're very happy to give up our time, as I said, to be marshals or help out with a pumpkin festival for the Jubilee Sailing Trust. So it's the time as well that we are willing to contribute.
So why do you think you still get, you know, not on such a big scale, because more and more people are probably either becoming Masons, finding out more about it, not quite so ignorant about it. Why do you think you still get a little bit of a hard time? Because you do.
I think it goes back to the secret society you mentioned, the fact that a man might be a Freemason and he would say to his family, oh, this is secret, don't tell anybody. And it goes back to those days, and we've left those behind long ago. But you're still going to get pockets of individuals who say actually that there is something sinister here, because they are a secret society, aren't they? And we're doing our best to get rid of that.
Would it be fair to say then, over the years, and especially now, there's probably more honesty than there's ever been in society regarding, you've got the stories with what's been going on in certain care homes and stuff like that 30 odd years ago. Nowadays, all these things are now coming out. So would it be fair to say that because we're all under the microscope a little bit more? I mean, yeah, everyone's got I bet you've got a mobile phone on you.
Yes.
With a camera.
Yes.
And you could be recording this, you could take a picture of it, and like everybody else, and nothing's a secret now. Nothing is a secret. I'm not saying we've recorded this live, so I mean, you know, it's out there. But the point I'm making is, you know, 20, 30 years ago, 40 years ago, there were things that we could have brushed up, and it could have been a secret, and so on and so forth. Now it's much harder to keep a secret, isn't it?
It is, but we have had this openness, the push for openness, since the our present Grand Master was installed almost 50 years ago, and he said at that stage that we've got to become much more open. We became a secret society, or we became secret about our membership for very clear and obvious reasons, which I've already mentioned. And now we need to move on, and we need to now go back to where we were when we started out, which is very much part of the community and seen as a power for good within the community. And I've got to say, Ian, if ladies out there knew what we did for what Freemasonry does and what it does for their men, they'd be pushing their men through our doors to join us.
Right, okay. The wife may listen to this a little bit later on, and she might want to know a little bit more. Can you say a little bit more?
It's all about improving your moral standards, your individual self. That's what we do over a period of time, with men attending our ceremonies, being part of the ritual drama that we go through on a meeting by meeting basis, and it improves your self-confidence, it improves your self-worth, it improves your moral standards. It's based on integrity, it's based on fairness, it's based on honesty, and the more that gets through to individual blokes, the better they become. And one thing we all say is that, you know, Freemasonry is all about making good men better, and that really is what we do.
Okay, well, I can see what you're saying there, because my can I say my father-in-law's a Freemason?
You can. You can name him if you like.
Well, I don't want to get him into trouble, but he's one of only very few men that I have met, and he's changed the way that I think sometimes. And I look at him and I think, I want to be like you, because he's a kind man. He really does see the good, or tries to see the good in most. And, you know, I just think that's a wonderful quality. And if that is, you know, if that's the reason why, I'm sure he was a nice person before anyway, but I mean, it's probably just enhanced, you know. But who knows? But, yeah, no, I can see where you're coming from on that. We've run out of time, literally. Is there any, like, details that you can push people to, websites, and, you know, if they wanted to join, want to know more, how can they help, and so on and so forth?
Well, I'm going to pass over to David for that, because he would have the the information on that. If someone wants to follow me on Twitter, then it's at Michael Wilkes 2, and I have quite a good Twitter following. But what I put out on Twitter is not just Masonic. I put out what we do outside Masonry, which is I ride motorcycles. I my family run a motorcycle race team that goes out on Twitter too, and it just is a general indication of what we do. But I'll pass over to David now so that he can.
Okay, and you are human. You don't have like thorns coming out your head or anything like that.
I couldn't get a helmet on if I did that.
I'll just say our website is hampshirefreemasonry.com, and our Twitter site is Hans Mason, at Hans Mason. And there's a Flickr site as well, which is Hampshire Masons, flickr.com, Hampshire Masons. And there's loads and loads of photos that you can access there and see what we get up to.
You guys are up with it, aren't you? It's a pleasure to spend an hour with you. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you very much. Very much appreciate it.